Live on digital radio, colorfulradio.com, and apps. This is Colorful Radio.
The green list of countries where people can take holidays abroad might be expanded next month. That's what Government Minister Gillian Keegan suggested this morning amidst growing criticism about a lack of clarity on international travel rules. The Victims Commissioner says courts are not protecting people who experience sex crimes. She wants a shake-up of the system. Dame Vera Bird wants to see victims recording their evidence and being cross-examined ahead of court cases. The cost of living in the UK has risen sharply, with the price of heating our homes, buying clothes and fueling our cars all on the increase. The Office for National Statistics tells us Britain's rate of inflation more than doubled in April compared to March. The rise comes after months of discounting in retail especially. And singer Jason Derulo has welcomed his first child with influencer girlfriend Jenna Frumes. She gave birth to a boy on the 8th of May. They've named him Jason King Derulo. That's the latest from Radio News Hub by Mandy Seddon.
If you're a business welcoming back your customers, it's important you keep yourself, your employees, and your customers safe. Because around 1 in 3 people who have COVID-19 have no symptoms and are spreading it without knowing. Prevent overcrowding, increase ventilation so that COVID-19 particles are blown away, and ask customers to check in using the NHS COVID-19 app or by providing their contact details. Let's take this next step safely. For further guidance, visit gov.uk/working safely.
Coming up next, the business mix on Colourful Radio.
Now we're gradually coming out of lockdown. We can go to more places, like pubs, restaurants, hairdressers and gyms. However, around 1 in 3 people who have COVID-19 have no symptoms and are spreading it without knowing. By quickly checking into venues with the NHS COVID-19 app, you can help stop the virus spreading and protect your family and friends. So whenever you go out, check in. Let's take this next step safely.
7 weeks from listening to this advert, you could be thousands of pounds better off. Nope, this is not a competition, and it won't cost you a penny to find out. If you've lost money on investments missold by a bank, like a stocks and shares ISA or investment bond, then in just 7 weeks, you could get it back through AMK Legal. No paperwork is needed. Simply text LOST to 78900. That's LOST to 78900. Seriously, 7 weeks.
Live on digital radio, colorfulradio.com, and apps. This is Colorful Radio.
Stay here with me. Say you'll stay here.
with no repeat. What's done is done, my fears released one by one. Let's have some fun. Say you'll stay here with me all day long.
Colorful.
The Business Mix.
Colorful Radio.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. I am Christy, and welcome to The Business Mix.
Welcome to the Business Mix Show on Colourful Radio. I am Rachel, and we are here with another great show to keep you company on your entrepreneurial journey. And yes, I'm really looking forward to speaking to this guest. As we were just mentioning off air, we've actually been kind of talking about having this guest on for at least 2 years now. So we're very, very excited and happy to welcome onto the show Sidell Stewart, who is I want to say possibilities architect, but I don't know if that's right. She'll come and she'll tell me in a minute if I've said it right or wrong. But today we are talking about your customers. Today our show is all about how you interact with your customers, your customer journey, the touch points that your customer has with you, interacting with you and your business, whether it be service, whether it be product based. Sidell is an absolute queen legend of all things automation, how to get your business systemized, you know, how to collect that data about your customers. So really looking forward to speaking with Sidell on that.
Yes. And to add to that, Rachel, if you think you're getting her after 6 o'clock on any day, you're mistaken.
No, do you know what you will get? You get the out of office that says, I don't work past this time, so yes, you better email me tomorrow. But I love it. I absolutely love it. I actually think it's a point for all of us entrepreneurs that think we must answer emails, that we must be available 24/7. Yeah, actually, if you let your, even if when you let your customers know, I'm available on this day between this time and this time, and if you don't get me then, try again the next day.
And not to leave things at the last minute. So I'm looking forward to this one.
All right, shall we ask the lady to join us and introduce herself?
Greetings and salutations, ladies. It's so nice to be here. You ladies are making me laugh already. I'm loving the mashup of my name, Rachel. You just combine two words and I'm like, why didn't I think of that? Possibly architect. I love it. Actually love it.
Please give the proper introduction to your name and who you are and what you do.
Greetings, colourful listeners. My name is Sidell Stewart. I am a possibility ambassador and a business operations architect. Basically, what that means is I help my clients to focus on delivering delightful client experiences whilst working on the things that light them up in their business and forgetting about doing hashtag all of the things.
Love it. Okay, so yeah, I did do a bit of a mix and match there, but it still sounded good.
It was
good.
A remix,
so
like coffee.
It still sounded good. It still sounded good. It still sounded like it could work. If someone said, "Hi, I'm Sidel. I'm a possibilities architect," it would make sense, right?
Yeah, it does make sense. I quite like it.
On her Instagram hashtag. Possibility architect
tomorrow. It's true. I'm going to adopt it because actually, what I have struggled with in the last year is explaining what a business operations architect actually means. If you say to somebody, "I'm a possibilities architect," that's quite straightforward. It does what it says on the tin. It's like, oh, you build possibilities. I need possibilities. What possibilities can you build for me? So yeah, I might jack it. Never know.
Fine, I'll give it to you for free. It's okay. You don't need to steal it. I'll give it to you. Okay, so we know a little bit more about what you do. And to some people, they might be like thinking, well, I don't even understand what that is. What does that mean? We're going to get into that. But before we do, I've listened to you explain kind of like a bit of your business journey beforehand and some of the things that you were doing and how you thought, actually, I like this bit of what I do, I like this bit, and I don't like that bit. So just give us and our listeners a real brief insight into how you got to where you are today and how you decided on being a possibility ambassador.
So my journey has started in business support, office support, as a team secretary many moons ago. I started working in offices when people still smoked at their desks. I am old school out here. And I supported a sales team. I worked my way up over the course of around 14 or 15 years. I worked my way through all of the business support roles that you can imagine. So administrator, receptionist, personal assistant, executive assistant, office manager, you name it, I did it. And then I was loving the work. I've always enjoyed the work. I enjoy setting people up for success, looking at what systems are in place and seeing how they can be streamlined or improved. But what I didn't enjoy as a opinionated, dark-skinned, 6-foot-tall black woman in Britain was working in corporate spaces. I hated it and I found it really, really challenging. I was always too bold. I was always considered too bold, too opinionated, too intelligent, just too many things to say. Like, I wasn't a sit and do as you're told type of person. I wasn't raised to be a do as you're told. Or I was raised to say do as you're told, but don't do as you're told without question. If you've got questions, ask them. And so I've always been a curious child, which turned into an annoying adult of, what does that mean? And how did you get there? So when you do that, what happens next? And so I spent my career doing that, discovering what works, what doesn't work, trying to get to the crux of, don't tell me how to do something. Tell me what you want the end result to be. I will figure out how to get there.
Right.
And having the autonomy to figure that out for myself is the part of the job that I've always loved. But being in corporate spaces, by the time when you're working as a personal assistant or executive assistant, you're just aiming for more money. There's nothing else to do. Like, once you've reached that level and you're working with C-suite execs, it's like, what else could I be doing? You could get involved in a few more things in the business, but you don't really feel like your input has that much impact on the business. Yeah. So then it just gets to, if I worked for somebody at this level, then I could earn another $5,000 a year. And if I worked to someone at this level, and I did that for a while until I got to chief exec. Chief exec role is the most boring role. It is so boring. Not like supporting the chief exec, I should say.
Sorry to all the chief exec PAs out there. We're not saying
real. It's boring. Do you know why? There's no challenge at that level. If you work for C-suite execs beneath the CEO, there's a bit of a challenge. If you work for the chief marketing officer, chief financial officer, chief operating officer, technical officer, any of those, there's a bit of a challenge. When you work for the top of the tree, everybody yields to that person.
True.
So anything you need, people they just get say yes. You.
Yeah.
There's no figuring things out or say, as soon as you say who you work for, people go, okay, because they know there's nothing to argue with. They can't say, well, my boss has got a meeting at that time and it can't be moved. Really? Really? Is that what we're doing? And then it becomes, yeah, okay, no problem, I'll move it. They're vexed. Let's not get it twisted. But they will accommodate your boss. Yeah. So for me, that became, there's no challenge in that. I'm just sitting here twiddling my thumbs. Diary management, yeah, it's breezy. I've been doing it such a long time. I can book meetings in time zones across 5 different time zones for 7 different people with my eyes closed. I'm used to that. So then it became, what else could I be doing? And at this stage, towards the end of my full-time employment career, I was working in investment banking. Another great environment in terms of the fast-paced nature, the level of responsibility. I was a float EA for equity research, which sounds dull. Depends what you like in terms of research. If you like research, it's a bag of laughs. If you don't, not so much. And there were 260 people in this department. And I was working as a float. So because all my experience had been as a contracting EA and I'd done lots of temp work, it was a dream for me because it meant I was practically a temp within one department. And so I'd move from team to team, supporting different people in different industries. So one week I might be working on oil and gas. Another week it might be investment banking itself. Then another week it might be transport and tourism and leisure. So I was getting exposed to lots of different industries, but still essentially doing what I do best, which is support people, help them get where they need to be, booking travel, doing diaries, etc. But it got to the point where the business, I don't know, there was a lot going on. I think this was around the time of Lehman Brothers crashed. I think when they bailed the banks, they were bailing out the banks and there was a lot going on. And it was like, okay, redundancies are coming. We can see that's going to happen. And I was like, come on, I wish I would get made redundant. I would be so excited. And ordinarily, executive assistants don't get made redundant or their roles don't get made redundant. What happens is they just get redeployed somewhere else in the business. So you never really kind of get that payout that you might think, oh, maybe.
That you're waiting for, yeah.
Yeah, well, you know, I didn't want to say, but. So there was me and one other EA who turned up one day at work, literally walked in the morning, 5 to 9, skin of my teeth, and was called into a meeting. It's just like, well, what's going on? But didn't have any time to have a conversation with anybody else to find out what was happening. And it was this huge boardroom. I'm sat at one end, there's this man sat at the other end of the table. All I wanted to do was say, can you pass the salt? Because I was in my head, I was having this whole comedy scene playing out in my head of him
having
throwing the salt. Yeah, throwing the salt down the table. And so I had to kind of suppress that because it wasn't the time and the place, clearly. And he basically explained that my role was being made redundant. So I was grinning and he stopped mid-sentence. He's like, are you okay? I said, I'm fine. And he says, you just look really relieved. You look really happy. And I just started laughing. And I just said, as my mum says, every opportunity, for every disappointment, there's an opportunity. And so this is not the end of the world. What this will enable me to do is go and retrain in something else. And I have a really strong interest in comms. And I was interested in doing PR. So I literally skipped out of that building. 20 minutes after that meeting, I was in a car just being chauffeured home with all of my desk contents. And that was that. I was on gardening leave for 3.5 months. I think I got paid 5 months salary in total and wasn't allowed to work for 3 months. So it gave me real opportunity to consider my options whilst not worrying about I've got my rent to pay and take that money and decide, okay, what do I want to do? And at that point, I was already in the world as a performance poet, spoken word artist. So I was really enjoying that journey. And I had already identified there are other performers who need this kind of admin support that I do naturally for myself. Mm. And they need help promoting their gigs, helping finding gigs. And so I said, I could do this for other people and charge for it. So that's what I did part time. So by the time—
So were you doing that were you doing that whilst you were working?
I was doing it while I was working. So I was gigging probably 2 or 3 nights a week, going to live open mic nights and performing up and down the country and at weekends. And I got to do some amazing performances. Like, I performed at Brixton Academy, Hackney Empire, Catford Broadway. Like, really, well, at that time, having
high profile,
they were really high profile venues. Yeah. With not that much experience, really, and I got to work with some amazing people, and so for me that was exciting that I was going to get to actually bring two sets of skills and marry them together, and make a living out of it. So I was really excited. I did my Chartered Institute of PR qualification, and then I set up Onnit PR Limited, and I was just that was the beginning of the journey, and the journey is peaks and troughs and headbutts and all sorts.
So how did you get to the I guess what people call it, you know, your sweet spot, where you're like, okay, I'm going to take a bit of this and a bit of that to get to the Sadel Stewart that you are today, like, and to the services that you provide today? Was there like a light bulb moment where you thought, actually, yes, this is it, this is me, this is what I love to do?
Yeah, but do you know what, that was only last year, and I've been doing this for 12 years now. So I started off after I took the redundancy and I started the business, maybe 18 months to 2 years in, I crashed, I hit a wall, like, hard. It was like, okay, this is not a game. I'm struggling. I was struggling to pay my rent. Every minute I was asking my mum to loan me money. And my mum was like, I borrows again. And she'd give me a little cider, and then she'd give me an envelope. She knew, she always knew. But my mom was very supportive of all the creative endeavors that I had. But she was also like, you know what, Sid, you need to, you know, are you looking for a job? I was like, no, mom, I'm not looking for a job. I'm setting up my business. I was getting really frustrated. And she was like, I know you're setting up your business, but, and so I'd have to listen to the talk. But it was all coming from a good place. And so I juggled the two for a long time. And then I got to a point where I went to a creative school for startups, and I was doing this course. And basically, I got singled out to tell my story to the group, and it was 100 of us, right? So we're in this massive room, and the guy asked me, oh, you know, tell us about your business model. So I got up, and I wasn't cocky, because I don't like talking in front of lots of people, but I felt quite confident because I've been doing this for a few years now. So I was like, yeah, you know, I run a company supporting independent entertainers. And so then he started asking me questions about my business. And then he was just like, you don't have a business. You've got what our good friend Natalie would say is
a passion project.
Passion project and an expensive hobby. He was like, that's not a viable business. And I was humiliated. I just remember looking around the room, seeing one other black person and one other person of colour, which was Jessica Huey, actually, who was in the group as well. And I remember just feeling like this small. And I just thought, why did you make me get up just to tell me that I was rubbish, basically? And it was, all he did really was just be honest. But it triggered all of my own doubts and fears and insecurities around, how am I even in business? I don't know anything about business. I never studied business. I've never read a business book at that point. I hadn't prepared for this journey. I had somehow organically found myself in this space, and it was going okay, but it wasn't really a business. And so I left there like, what do you know? You don't know nothing. Don't know nothing about me. You're just judging me because I never went to a business school. Woo. And I just had this whole defensive kind of reaction,
but many of us, that's how we start. For some,
that's what I was just about to say.
We jump in and we're like, yeah, this is what I'm gonna do, and I'm loving it, and I'm good at it. I don't know what a balance sheet is. I'm not looking for a comm strategy. I don't need without having that long-term business strategy, not necessarily a business plan, but not necessarily having a plan for your business either.
And I never really had a plan.
And I didn't even have a plan, she says.
And I'm sure we always say on this show, like, if you're going to start something, just start, you will find it as you go on, because otherwise it stops a lot of people from doing actually what they want to do. You know, I think we say it on the show all the time, because you will find your way eventually. You will learn some of the hard knocks of life.
Absolutely. And even if it is someone saying, actually, this isn't actually a business, you know, it just helps you to, okay, let me just go back and reframe and have a look at why this is not a business when I think it is. But then, okay, so it wasn't a business then, maybe, perhaps, but you have a business now.
Yeah. And so for a while, you know, what happened was I did hit a wall and it got really peak and it was like, yeah, this is not working. I was really, really depressed and I just went back to working and I managed my clients part time so that I could juggle the two. And then even that in itself was still a slog. And then in maybe, I think around 2012, I decided to give it another go full time, which I did. Then I started working with some bigger artists and had the pleasure of working with artist Ty and lots of other people in the spoken word scene and on the independent music circuit. And it was all going well. But then over time, it just became apparent that my business model really didn't work. Mm. And it was at that point, which was probably a good 4 years after that conversation with the business mentor, that I realized, yeah, he actually had a point. Yes, of stubbornness, but I got there in the end and it was like, yeah, this is not working. So I wound up my clients and basically said, I'm gonna go back to contracting, and that broke my soul because it felt like failure. And even though it wasn't failure in the slightest, in the moment, that's what it felt like. And so I went back to being a full-time executive assistant. And I'm telling you, within 3 months, I wanted to kick somebody down. I wanted to kick them down. I said, yeah, no, I'm not meant for this. I weren't built for this. I'm not meant to be here. This is not, this was a lesson. I think we mentioned earlier before we was on air, this is a lesson in fix up and do right and work out what you're doing with your life, because if you don't make that work, then this is all you've got. And this was not fun. So I just decided I need to fix up and work out what I'm doing. And it just so happens in that time, I'd taken on a maternity cover contract and was working for a national newspaper, which was a great position. And because it was for a finite period of time, I knew at the end of that 9 months, I needed to have something worked out. And it just so happens that in that time, even though I had been working as a virtual assistant for coming up to 9 years at that point, I'd never heard the term virtual assistant. I didn't know what that meant. I didn't know what it was. I went to a personal assistance conference and somebody there was a VA trainer and she was talking about being a VA. And I was like, oh my gosh, that's what I do. It was the light bulb of I've been, all the things she talked about, I was already doing, but I hadn't realized that they came under this umbrella title. And so then I went and did this research and discovered this parallel universe that was coexisting in real time, which was a huge market, absolutely huge. And I was like, there's a place for me here using my existing skills, working when I want to work, wherever I want to work. Like, is this real? Like, it felt too good to be true. Because I didn't understand how I could use my skills to do this thing, working from home, and still have credibility. Like, people weren't going to misbelieve me or people hire me if they've never seen me. Or because I'd been through, up until this point, I'd been through so many circumstances. And the last two interviews I did before I went full time. The last two interviews I did before I went full time had been horrendous experiences. And both of them belittled me. And it made me just realize, I was never meant to go back to working as an employee because the corporate world, they can't manage me. And and actually, that's not a negative thing, because I spent a lot of time beating myself up about that, feeling like I had to bend myself to fit, when actually I realised, no, it's not for me. Going in interviews and having somebody sit after on the third interview for the woman to tell me, something here is just not quite right. I said, sorry? She's looking at my CV. She's looking at me. She's looking at the CV. She's looking at me. And she says, you're just too good to be true. What aren't you telling us?
Oh, wow.
Wow.
So it's going to speed you on a few because of time. Yeah. I think I can already tell. So fast forward, you're here now. Tell us what services you provide. What can you do for anybody, everybody? Tell us what you do in a nutshell. Okay.
So I don't work for everybody, I should say that. I work for service. I work.
I actually saw a post that says it's okay if that person is not for you. You can say no. Yeah. I remember that post. I saw it. Tell us what you do now.
So I work with service-based businesses. I work specifically with coaches and consultants. Most of those are in the online space, but they don't entirely have to be. I also work with fitness coaches, yoga teachers, all sorts of different coaches and consultants. And primarily what I help them to do is to identify what systems they need in their business that can help them to streamline their operations, that can help them to automate parts of their business that needs automation, even if they don't realize what can be automated. And I also help them to do that, but always with the client experience at the core of everything that they're doing. Because often I find that, I would say 9 out of 10 times when people come to work with me, they've never considered their customer journey. It's just not something that people naturally think of. And it surprised me because it's always been a big part of everything I've done. So I didn't understand how people didn't think about, well, if you want to work with somebody, or let's say, for example, a key example is you post on social media. Everybody's on social media trying to get clients. We all know this. You're on social media, you're posting something, you're telling somebody about this amazing service that you offer, but then you don't give them a clear guideline on what they should do next. You don't give them a clear call to action. So they're not really clear. They keep seeing the post, but you've never actually said to them, DM me, or hit the link in my bio for more information. So it's helping people to think about those steps. And then once somebody does that, what happens next? So I'll say to a client, okay, you've asked somebody to get in touch with you. They've gone to your website. Now what? Yeah, they'll contact me. No, they won't. How will they contact you? They'll go to my contact page. Okay, and then what? They'll go to send me an email. Why are they sending you an email? So they can get in contact with me. Why not use a scheduler? What does a scheduler do? A scheduler bridges the gap between going back and forth with someone 15 times to agree a time that you're going to meet. Yeah, you have a scheduler that they can choose a date from. It's booked straight away. They're confident they're going to get to speak to you. If you have pre-qualifying questions that you need to know ahead of having that conversation, you can ask those in that process. So you've taken somebody from your LinkedIn page or your Instagram bio straight to a scheduler, they've booked a time of you going to have a call, versus you told somebody to visit your website for more information. They've gone to your website, they've fallen into a rabbit hole because there's so many different pages to choose from. Now they can't remember what they came here for. Then they're like, oh, I was going to contact you. They fill in your contact form and then you never reply. Because I don't know about anybody else, but every single, I filled in a contact form on Friday and I did it with such reluctance. And all now, the person hasn't responded. Now, it's only Monday. You could argue they might get back to me. Chance are they're never going to get back to me because they don't even know where that, they don't even know
where that goes to. Guilty.
It's common. It's really
have
common.
Have been.
Really common thing. So I help people to figure these things out. So when I talk about client mapping, which I do a lot online, people go, oh, what's that? So it's basically mapping the journey that you want someone to take from the very first touch point they have with you right until the end. And so that comes in 4 stages. There is the the introduction of your service, what that looks like, what you could potentially do for them, what transformation it is that you offer. And then there is, so that also includes having an initial discussion with somebody, understanding what it is you can do for them, them understanding how you can help them. They say, oh my gosh, this is great. This is just what I need. Amazing. Cool. How do we go on to work together? Now the person's like, what happens next is I'll send you an invoice. You missed out a fundamental thing. Where's your contract? Please don't move forward without a contract. Or they say, I'll send you a contract. Then they go away and then they go and find the last contract they sent and then they try and copy and paste the information from one to create a new one. It's common. This is so common. So they'll you know, piecemeal a new document for this particular person. That's taking them time. It's taking them away from their duties, not from their duties, but it's taking them away from their day-to-day work. They've got other things that are probably more pressing right now, but this is new business, right? So they want to get it in the door. So they're focusing on getting this contract done. Then they're going to go, and often people are going to go to Word and create an invoice, and I start itching because it's so painful. So then they'll create an invoice in Word. Then they're going to PDF that. Oh, then they're going to send that in an email. Chris is laughing at me. They're going to send that in an email, hopefully. If the person's lucky, they might get that the next day, maybe. Some people will take 2 days to get that together. By then, that person might have gone cold.
I was going to say, so this is all about, okay, if you're on the other side of the table, how do you feel waiting for all these separate documents to come? Okay, I'll send you the quote. Okay, you want the quote. Okay, I'll send you. Okay, you've got the, okay, oh, now we've got to schedule another date for us to actually do the work that needs to be done. And yeah, I think you're right. For a lot of entrepreneurs, because we're such, in the moment of what we're doing, we think about what we have to do. Like, we think about us and the work that we've got to do. Yeah, the customer is important, obviously. Without the customer, there would be no, we wouldn't have a business. Yeah. But we're thinking about it from our perspective, like, okay. And normally it's not even like, okay, what is the easiest thing for me to do? It's like, okay, what do I know what to do? Because I don't know how to do all that other stuff. So let me just type out my invoice in Word because I know how to do that. Rather than, what can I learn or what can I outsource? And we talk about this a lot as well, is that actually we don't need to be an expert in everything in order to have a great, hold on, let me get this right, slick, sexy, systemized business. Like, you know, we don't need to be the expert in that. That's why we come to Sedell, because Sedell will help us, will do that for us.
Why it's interesting.
It is.
Sorry, Kristen.
Why I laugh is because why I laugh. It is very much about, it is the customer experience and how they experience from one point to another, to another, to another. But also, as for the entrepreneur, all these things, you auto, the automation, is that the right word? Yeah. It stops you from having to do everything, you know? Yeah. At least people know that you're not going to be there from these hours. You've got something like the invoices. It's done for you. All you have to do is rather than design it from Word or try and do it in Excel so it adds it up.
So it all lines up, it adds up,
It's what we do. So, okay, so just give us in a like, you know, as a roundup, we are going to do a part two to this because I think there's a lot more that we can delve into. But if someone came to you, like say that customer who came to you, who's like, oh yeah, I type my invoices out in Word and then I send emails to get our meeting date done. And you know, what's your starting point to help them think about things in a more systemized way or systemized process?
So I like to say to people, put yourself in your client's shoes. When you do this, let's make a note together. Let's work for it together. Those four core areas, those different steps. So the introduction to service, the onboarding, the client management and project management, and then the offboarding. Those are the four core areas. So I say to them, if we split these into four, in your business at the moment, how would you do this bit? For a lot of people, most of those areas don't exist. The only thing that they do regularly is know that they need to send a contract and an invoice. And for a lot of people, they'll say, I sent an email and that's a contract. And I'm like, well, I've never had any problems. I've been doing that for 20 years. Okay, cool. I'm not gonna fight you. Do you know what I mean? But that's not best practice and you're not covered. Mm. And with all of the different things that we have in place now, so even things as simple as GDPR, for data protection and being registered with the ICO, which means information for commissioner's office, so that you have made a pact, if you like, or you've made a declaration that you know how to handle people's data. Even something as simple as that. If you're a service-based business, there are considerations that you need to have. Mm. How do you manage people's data? What reassurances do you give them? But more so, people remember how you made them feel, as the infamous Maya Angelou says. And so what people fail to realize is if you can create a delightful client experience, people will choose you over other people just because you made them feel good.
Yeah.
And so the hard work is already done. Mm. I once had I run a VA agency, and so
You missed that client bit out of your story, by the way.
I didn't get there, did I? Because I was rambling forever. But yeah, so I
went VA for just people who don't know assistant. VA virtual assistant.
I went from being a virtual assistant, which is basically an online personal assistant, if you like, but it covers so much more now because you've got people calling themselves VA if they're a web developer and a graphic designer and all sorts. But I started the agency, and I had a client come to me. Now, my VA services are not cheap. Don't pretend to be. I don't have any issue saying that, because what you get is an executive level, a corporate level of expertise.
Mm.
And that is in all of the team members that are part of the team on it.
Yeah.
So basically, this lady came. She's been a client for 4 years now, maybe five. But when she came to speak to me, she went through this process of onboarding. So she chose a date in the diary. She was recommended, and she had put out a brief for a role that she was advertising. And I put myself forward, but I gave her the link to my diary. And she came on the call, and my meeting room is branded, and she got a reminder before the session, and she had an email explaining what was going to happen during the meeting. And she said she was blown away. She said the experience from beginning to end was so memorable. And she said it was so slick, which is where I kept hearing slick, which is where slick, sexy and systemized came from. And she said it just worked. And she says, you're nearly £15 an hour more expensive than the person, that the most expensive other VA that she had spoken to. But she said, didn't matter. She'll send me a contract and let's get going, because she just saw the value. So I think depending on how you make people feel in their touch points with you in coming on board as a client, it can determine whether or not someone goes ahead and works with you.
Yeah,
and that's shown itself to be true lots of times. And so that's what I do for my clients, with their clients. I help them to create those memorable experiences.
So how do you make the switch? Like, let's say you've gone through those four areas and you've decided you come up with this workable plan, and, you know, your clients paid you the extra £15 an hour because you're so great. Yeah, you've done that. How do you make the switch from, okay, this is what we used to do, to this is what we're doing now? Is it something that's done like overnight? You just change everything all at once? Can it be done little by little? How does the actual process of implementing all of this go?
I think you can do it gradually. You can start with, we touched earlier offline about setting people's expectations. You can start with something as simple as that. So setting boundaries. Boundaries are key when you're working for yourself, as any entrepreneur will tell you, because otherwise you get sucked into working 24 hours, people being expecting you to be available 24/7.
Yes.
You can start with something as simple as always having an out of office message on your email that is on 24/7 and actually dictates to the person, thanks for getting in contact. This is when you can expect to hear back from me. These are my business hours. That's it.
Yeah.
Something that simple starts to create a boundary, but it also starts to create a professional reputation for how you work.
Yeah.
So then by the time you do meet with somebody, when they message you and you're not available, they're not upset because they know when you will be because you've explained. Something else, like we talked about invoicing, switching from doing invoices in Word, which might feel like a minor in the moment because it takes me a few minutes. I just change the name and the amount and it's fine. But you got to think longer term. When you're thinking about systemizing your business, you're thinking ahead. What is this going to save me in the long run? Systemizing your invoicing is saving you from having paper all over the place, digital files in different places. It means that all of your invoices are in a accounting software system, which also can be given, access can also be given to your accountant, which makes their life easier, which costs you less money in the long run. It means that they can see at a glance what your income and outgoings will be, what your expenses are. They can match your receipts in there, and it all exists in one place. You haven't got to go download all of the invoices that you issued this year, find them, find your bits of paper for your receipts, scan those, and then year end, you're pulling out your hair.
Yeah.
It's all in a system. And the invoicing system will send reminders on your behalf. So you're not chasing people for money and feeling some kind of way about asking people why they haven't paid your invoice. Put it on autopilot and you just let it do its thing.
Interesting.
So those are small steps that you can take. One of the bigger things I do is I build a system called Dubsado, which is a client management system, which is a digital version of all of those things that we've talked about in one system. So I help people to map their journeys for their core services and then create the client journey in that system, so that when they propose their services, the proposal, the contract, and the invoice is all in one touch point. So they get one document on screen. If they're happy with the proposal to go ahead, they put their details, they click submit, the screen transitions automagically, as I call it, to a contract. They read the contract, they sign it, the screen then changes to an invoice, they make the invoice payment, done. And then that triggers the next email in the sequence in the back end, and they get their onboarding message. Hi, welcome on board.
You see?
Don't this you love is, it already? I'm this smiling. Like, I love this
like, this is the kind of thing, and I know that lots of people already do things like this, but actually, I believe that, as you said, Sadel, if it's something that we do from the beginning, like, we shouldn't wait until we get to a certain point or a certain level in our income or turnover or whatever it is before we do this. If we start as we mean to go on, then, yeah, the transitions, this is what people will know us as. They will know us as kind of systemized kind of...
And you don't have to wait then. If you're waiting to say, when I'm earning X, then I can level up. Yeah, there's an element of you've got to invest. But guess what? That money, that investment is going to help you get to that goal quicker, because people will see the quality. They will see the journey, and they will see why you cost what you cost, and they won't have any qualms paying it. If you say to somebody, I charge X, and they're umming and ahhing, but they say, all right, cool, send me a proposal. And then you send them a proposal and it's a Word document and it's got typos and, you know, it hasn't been PDF'd and they can make changes to it and you haven't even realised. And do you know what I mean? People will think twice. They'll be like, not sure.
Yeah, definitely.
The same way people use a gmail.com email address for business and they don't. They just, one of my biggest bugbears, like I've almost come to facts over this.
Don't use gmail.com. I mean, Gmail, I'm not too bad with it. It's when things like, I think we've spoken about this before, when it goes back to like btinternet.com, I'm like, nah, because you haven't moved with the time. Tiscali or something. I'm like, Tiscali,
AOL, BT Internet, all of those emails, but I still get the email. So what's the problem? Why do I need to change it? Why are you being a fascist over email? Like, it still gets where it needs to go. But I'm like, No, we're not doing that around here. We do things properly. Excellence is the goal. Client delight is the journey. Excellence is the goal. So always be thinking about, where is it that you want to take somebody? If you send a proposal to somebody and it's beautiful and it's amazing and they're going through it and they're like, oh, I've never met this person. I'm doing business with somebody online that I'm never going to meet. And then they get to the email address and they see, you know, imagine you saw Harrods at gmail.com. You'd be like, hey.
Why do you have to go there though? I don't get it. Why did we need to go there?
Because I needed to illustrate the point, because people always act like you're being bougie, gmail.com's fine. And people go, I've never had a client not work with me because I had a gmail.com.
Well, you wouldn't know though.
You don't know.
Exactly. You would, that's the thing, you wouldn't know. You've but only got the client. Yes.
They will argue until they're blue in the face. And I'm like, do what makes you happy. But ultimately, if it's something so minute, why would you fight it when you could easily change it? Especially if you can tell I'm passionate about this, isn't it? Because my chest is getting packed. If you use a domain address, if you use a domain email, sorry, if you use a web email, so you've got a website, and then you use gmail.com.
On top of that, that doesn't make sense. That doesn't make any sense. Oh my gosh, we've come to the end. But before we go, what I really want to know, what I really want to get inside your head is, I want you to tell us one of the best customer experiences that you've had with a brand. You can name them or not, it's up to you. But I'm really interested as to what makes it a delight for you. Like, what makes you turn around and say, no, actually, they're slick, sexy, and systemized. Like, what is it?
Who was it?
Yeah, I'm thinking it's not so much the systemized aspect. Mm. I think the systemized aspects work well for me usually when something goes wrong. You know, like you need to send something back. I don't want to have to 101 hoops and go to the post office and have all of that pain. I want to know I can go in your app, choose a courier, someone's going to come back to my door. The same way it was delivered, someone's going to come back to my door and collect it.
Yep.
There's a barcode. Yep. I can turn the wrapping bag inside out and then stick it back together and use it. I'm chuffed. That will make me happy.
Wow, I've never thought about turning it inside out, you know.
I'm resourceful.
Because it's black.
Can I tell you? Yeah.
And then you haven't got them moaning in the shop, oh, you need to cover up the old barcode. It's already covered up. Oh, thank you.
You can do that. Just stick it. And most of these companies now, when they send you a bag, they leave an additional strip so that you can tear it off and seal it.
Yeah.
So you can do it that way. Yeah.
No. You're welcome. Okay, cool. Sorry. Okay. Yeah, go for it. Go on.
That's cool. So I think one of the most delightful experiences I had, I remember the very first time, and I have shopped with her many times since, is a brand called Love Yaya.
Oh,
and
yes.
The goods Nana makes, handmade accessories, leather accessories, they're beautiful Obi belts. And I remember the first time I saw it, I think somebody recommended it to me, and I saw her online. I didn't really know her that well. Don't think I really knew her at that point. And someone was like, oh, you should check out these belts, they're really nice. And I was like, is it gonna make me look slim? Yes, I want one. So I went to look at these belts and I was like, oh, it's quite pricey, I'm not sure. Not pricey at all. It's a leather belt. I think the oldest one I've got, I've had 10 years, and it's still in great shape. Like, I can still wear it to this day. So it was well worth the money, and it's handmade and it's leather. So it was don't want to spend money. Up until that point, I'd never spent more than a tenner on a belt. So I was like, not sure.
Want to do this.
So then I think it was about, I don't know, maybe 40 quid or something. And so anyway, I said, okay, I'm going to buy it because it just looked nice. It just looked right. And I pictured the outfit and everything. So I bought it. When I tell you this thing, I got an email straight away confirming the order. Then I got another email once it had been dispatched. Then when the box came, it was perfectly sealed in one of those mailing bags, but it wasn't inside flapping around the bag. It fits snug to the bag. Yeah. When I took it out, it was in another cardboard box. It was all tucked away neatly. It had a label on it with my name on it. And when I opened it, there was tissue paper and there was a handwritten message inside the box.
Beautiful.
But wait, this was sexy. It was just such a sexy experience. And that made me feel like I bought something that was really valuable, not just in the product itself, but the experience felt like a really valuable experience. Like somebody took their time with making that such a delightful way for me to receive their goods. And so then I took photos and then I posted it online because I was so excited by the experience. I shared it. And then other people bought belts off the back of that. And I've been buying belts ever since. I think I've got 9 now. And so it's been a delightful ongoing customer experience. And then I think there was also a voucher for if you buy another item within a certain period of time, get a slight discount as well. So I was incentivized to shop again. So it was just an all-round really good experience.
I think what we're speaking about is that you're right, is how you make the customer feel, and what you want to make the customer feel is valued.
Yes.
You want them to feel as though, Sadel actually values my custom. Sadel actually values who I am and what I, you know, and us working together. And I feel having a streamlined, kind of seamless, it makes you think, oh, the person, they've thought about this.
Yeah.
Well, you've thought about this, you know, when you work with your clients, you know, you've had to think about this and put that onto to your clients, really. So, we need a part 2, Chris, correct?
Yes, we do.
She's giving me those Chrissy eyes, so I'm just going to fall back now.
Yes, fall back.
Ask Sadel to tell us, how can we reach you? Where can we find out more about you? If people are really interested in your services, or perhaps they just want to be nosy and have a look, where can they find out more about what you do?
Okay, so you can find me on my website, which is my name, sadelstewart.com. And I'm sure you guys will put that somewhere online so people can get the spelling right, otherwise they won't find me. Or you can just type possibility ambassador, but it's possibility spelled POS ability rather than possibility. And there's a whole story behind that, which you can read on my website under my inspiration in the menu at the bottom of the page. And there are a ton of podcasts on there if people are interested in just hearing more about the journey. And if people want to get in touch about working with me, they can. You can also find me on my hangout of choice, which is Instagram at Sidell Stewart, where you'll find me sharing tips and opinions often. that's where I hang out.
Fantastic. And we didn't even get to hear about Barbados, so it's definitely got to be a part.
Oh, wow.
We
didn't
even go into that bit. But, yeah.
All right, guys.
It's been a pleasure. Well, thank you so much for having me.
We've really enjoyed it. There will be a part two. There has to be, because, we didn't dive in. We've got so much more.
We didn't do the deep dive.